From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. In a moment, how to make a ghost. We're going to talk about a new movie, too, called The Apparition. Get ready for that later tonight. Those open lines, plus I'm going to open up the cursed hotline. We haven't done that in a long time. Here's what's happening. Texas state health officials, alarmed by the worst outbreak of West Nile virus since the infection first hit the United States in 1999, started spraying insecticide from airplanes all over the place. Years of research show that the poisons being used in the spray are safe for humans, they say, and certainly safer than the virus. But blogs and social media lit up with concerned comments from people afraid the insecticide might hurt them, their children, or their creatures in the environment. Hey, I saw a note that was sent that said, close your windows, keep your pets in, try not to breathe. So what does that tell you? Dr. Leonard Horowitz, of course, international known authority on public health. He's with us. Len, first of all, let me ask you about the insecticides before we even get into West Nile virus. What do you think of this stuff?
Oh, it's deadly, and it's environmentally intoxicating, it's humanly intoxicating, and I agree with most of the blog sites. It's a sick and sad thing that you've got the criminals in charge of the EPA as well as the FDA and the drug cartel, which pops out these chemicals because it makes a lot of money. At the same time, there's a depopulation agenda. So it's an ideal way to expose people to a variety of toxins, neurotoxins, as well as immune suppressants, and then ultimately the most susceptible are those poor people who are immune suppressed, the elderly and the children.
What can you tell us about West Nile virus passed along, I guess, by mosquitoes?
That's the rumor, but I believe that the origin of the West Nile virus, and I've published a lot on this, the book, the Death in the Air book, Globalism, Terrorism, and Toxic Warfare, I came out with in the year 2000, had a whole section. I mean, the book was dedicated to the scam of the West Nile virus. And if you really look at where it came from originally, you're looking at Rockefeller Research Laboratories in Uganda, and then the shipment through the National Cancer Institute, through the New York University Medical Center laboratories that were conducting a variety of these types of studies, recombinants, and ultimately, I believe that they created a variety of these new types of viruses. So that's where I believe it came from. The good news is that it's not a particularly lethal virus. If you really even look carefully at the headlines, there's a dozen people so far who have been killed. There have been tens of thousands of people over many, many years. But again, that pales by comparison to some of the major risks that we're really looking at. So I think that it's probably a way to sell more of the chemicals and promote the chemical sprays. My recommendation for people is stay away from the chemical industry altogether. Go to the natural types of things. For example, you could use citronella and lemongrass and eucalyptus oils, natural oils, essential oils to protect adequately, and you don't need the chemical toxicity.
All right, Len. Dr. Len Horowitz's website linked up on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. You can also do a search on our website, coasttocoastam.com, for all the past appearances that Dr. Horowitz has made on Coast to Coast AM. Army suicides hit a new single-month record in July. 38 active duty and reserve soldiers took their own lives. Army officials say 187 active duty and reserve soldiers have committed suicide so far this year. Last year's total was 283. Many of the cases are suspected suicides. Under investigation, they have not been officially classified yet as suicide. This is a major problem. We are going to get Nurse Joyce Riley on, probably next week to talk about this. Well, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, if he's not asking for war, he's sure doing some strange things. He has told an annual anti-Israel protest in Tehran that the Jewish state was a cancerous tumor that will soon be excised. Ahmadinejad's diatribe against Israel was the latest in a long line to have drawn criticism from Western governments. And also amid concerns about the Iranian sanctions driving up oil prices, The U.S. is reportedly turning back to Saudi Arabia for more supply. According to the New York Times, Saudi oil exports have increased over the last year, reversing a trend in which the U.S. had decreased dependence on Persian Gulf oil. Jerome Corsi, with his upcoming book, The Great Oil Conspiracy, on with us here. Jerry, first of all, I want to get your reaction to Ahmadinejad. Is this guy insane or what? I mean, I've never heard of a leader of a country with so much diatribe and hate. He's asking to get attacked.
It's unbelievable. He's been doing this for years, George, and you also have Ayatollah Khamenei, who is saying that Israel's existence is an insult to all humanity. I mean, these are some of the most provocative statements Iran has issued in years, and they come after it's been revealed that Israel has a 30-day plan to go to war against Iran. I mean, again, the war drums are beating very strong in the Middle East with the likelihood of an Iranian-Israeli war on the horizon, again, very prominent.
It's almost as if he's taunting Israel to attack him.
Yes, he's really, I mean, he continues to wave this red flag in front of Israel, saying, you know, we're developing nuclear weapons, and, you know, this Israel's an insult to humanity. We're going to destroy Israel and wipe it from the face of the Middle East. All these statements are very provocative, and how can you just ignore them? I mean, certainly the history of the Jewish people has ample warnings not to ignore these kind of tyrants and autocrats who were threatening the existence of Jews.
You know, Jerry, I remember when I was a kid and the former Soviet premier Nikita Khrushchev took off his shoe in the United Nations,
right,
smashing it on the table saying, "We will bury you." I mean, at that point, everybody was alarmed. You know, I think that helped start the Cold War.
I remember it very well, George. It was, again, very provocative. And he, you know, Khrushchev pounding his shoe and his station there at the UN was a direct charge to the United States. It was an economic challenge at the time, but it was a direct warning that, you know, the Soviet Union then was choosing out the United States and going to bury us, at least economically. It's the same kind of thing Ahmadinejad is doing, and Ayatollah Khamenei, constantly confronting Israel. Insult to humanity that Israel exists, has to be wiped from the face of the earth. You can't ignore these statements. That's the problem.
That's right. Now, we're going to get you on soon to talk about your upcoming book, The Great Oil Conspiracy. But what's your take now of our reliance on more Saudi oil?
Well, again, it's a very defeatist strategy. Look, we've got oil closed at about $96 again, and gasoline's going up across the country.
Oh, yeah. I paid $4.35 for premium here in Los Angeles
today. It's unbelievable. I would say that we are looking at the prospect of $5 oil, and that's got to be alarming to everyone. The economic times are going through right now of $4 to $5 oil is just crippling. And, George, the problem is we could develop, and we, you know, would be in the process of developing our own oil, even independence. That's what my book, The Great Oil Conspiracy, is about. Oil is plentiful. If we, in fact, were allowed to drill and were allowed to develop oil resources, all the green energy initiatives, for as well-intentioned as they are, don't work and have not produced successful alternatives to oil and natural gas. And I maintain and continue to maintain, and we've covered this, George, the Great Oil Conspiracy is about oil is abiotic, it's plentiful, it's available within our reach, and we should develop our own natural gas and oil resources so we can reduce the cost of energy for Americans.
All right, Jerry, we're going to be in touch with you soon, okay?
Thanks, George. I look forward to it.
Dr. Jerry Corsi, a sunspot located on the sun's northeastern limb is crackling with impulsive C and M-class solar flares. This could herald an uptick in solar activity as the region turns toward Earth in the days ahead. While your toilet could be a ticking time bomb, I kid you not, a problem with flushing mechanisms that causes toilets to explode has prompted a recall of 2.3 million toilets in the United States and 9,000 in Canada. There have already been 304 complaints of exploding devices bursting. Products with the bad flusher include toilets from Home Depot and Lowe's and those made from 1997 to 2008 by American Standard, Kohler, Crane, Mansfield, St. Thomas, and Gerber. Unbelievable story. A Las Vegas woman filed a lawsuit earlier this month against Flushmate. The complaint claims that the repair kit failed to fix her faulty toilet, and all kinds of problems occurred after that. Up next, Joshua P. Warren joins us along with Todd Lincoln as we talk about how to make a ghost and the upcoming supernatural thriller, The Apparition, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Fascinating couple hours here. Joshua Warren, of course, you know him. He has spent years groundbreaking in the paranormal realm. He's all over the place, and he's been a regular frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM. Josh, say hi.
Hey, George. How you doing tonight?
Good. I'm looking forward to this. And, of course, Todd Lincoln, he works with Joshua. He's the director of the supernatural thriller that's coming out soon called The Apparition. Todd has shot several short films which earned awards, including, of course, the adaptation of Whitley Strieber's novel, The Nye Incidents. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Todd, how are you?
Hey, George, I'm doing great. It's an absolute honor to talk to you.
I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be fun. Josh, tell me of the relationship with you and Todd, because it's a strange one.
What a story I have for you tonight, George. This is something I've been wanting to talk about for 2 years.
You've been hinting about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really fortunate. You know, 2012 is climaxing into this amazing year to finally talk about some of the stuff I've been dying to discuss. Next month, I have a new TV series premiering on the Travel Channel. I'm a cast member on this new show called Paranormal Paparazzi that debuts September 28th. And then next Friday, August 24th, this new Warner Brothers horror movie comes out called The Apparition. Now, I was hired as the technical consultant on this film, and when you see how Coast to Coast AM was involved, I think you'll be even more amazed by how all this came together. But basically, 2 years ago, I was hired by Warner Brothers to conduct this crazy scientific experiment that was first thought up in fiction by Todd, and the purpose of the experiment was to create a ghost using a lab setup that has never before been attempted. And I am here to tell you tonight, believe it or not, Todd's fiction became fact. This actually worked.
Todd, how did you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, I've always been, since a very young age, fascinated with the macabre and the paranormal and supernatural and the unknown. And late one night, I was surfing around the web and digging on some of these paranormal and conspiracy websites that I just go to for fun. And I came across this story about called the Philip Experiment, this true story about this group of paranormal researchers in the earlier mid-1970s that had this theory that the paranormal events only happen because you believe that they're going to happen or you believe in them enough. And started reading about that and that this group had set out to create this fictional backstory of a guy named Philip, a person that never lived or existed, and they came up with how he lived and loved and died and even did a rough sketch of what he may look like. And they'd sit around this table in a normal suburban house and focus on Philip, and weeks and months would go by and nothing happened. And then over time, they'd get some knock on the table or some thump from the corner of the room, or the table would start to move a little bit, and then things started to ramp up and get more aggressive, the table knocking over on its side or feeling something move past you. And they became so terrified that they stopped the experiment, and then in following years and decades, other people picked up on this kind of idea of creating paranormal stuff from the power of belief and the power of fear. And I saw that other people it sort of amped up with new theories and new technology. And then, you know, months later, I was driving around Burbank, California, and I went to In-N-Out Burger and went through the drive-thru and was sitting in the parking lot eating my In-N-Out Burger and listening to Coast AM. And you were on, George, talking to Joshua, and Joshua was the guest, and he was talking about full body apparitions. Mm-hmm. He was talking about some of his recent experiments he was doing, and I had started to develop the apparition because this idea of creating a ghost or creating an apparition was such a fascinating, terrifying, fresh way into a horror film or ghost film that I had started to develop that at Warner Brothers and had pitched that to Joel Silver. And when I heard Joshua talking with you about full-body apparitions and some of these experiments, I immediately, wrote down his name in the car on some In-N-Out, napkin and contacted Joshua and, asked him to be the consultant on the film. And once I started talking to Joshua, I found out that he was actually doing one of these types of experiments or experiments like this in his lab and in his basement, and I was so blown away. I was really setting out to make a horror film that was really authentic and something that movie fans, horror fans, and paranormal fans and investigators, would all give their official stamp to. And so out of Joshua and I's conversations, we started to, come up with additional theories, and he was bringing in new gear and new equipment and military-grade equipment and custom-made gear, and, it started to just get really exciting about the possibilities of this. So, just closely consulting with Joshua to make sure everything was as correct as possible, and when we did the scene of this experiment in the film, we actually borrowed and flew in a bunch of Josh's personal equipment and set it up all the same way. But after the film wrapped, we had kept talking, and he started looking back to the script and back to some of the things we did in the movie and thought that maybe there was something to some of these new ideas we had added on to this kind of experiment. So I guess, he can tell you about that.
And Josh, how did you start the experiment? I mean, how do you make a ghost?
Well, it was funny because at first when I got the script, the idea was, hey, figure out what kind of equipment would be believable here. What would the believable setup be? What kind of jargon would be used? And so I went to the lab with a couple of my colleagues, Forrest Connor and Shelley Wright, and we started assembling all this equipment and setting it up. And when it was done, we stood there and looked at it for a minute, and I said, you know what? I bet you if we hit the power button, we could do this experiment. This is such a good concept because it's one thing to, take the Philip experiment, which is about using your mind to generate a ghost, and combining that with this high-level technology that literally amplifies your brain waves. And that's basically what the idea behind the apparition is. So we decided, hey, we need to do this. And we spent a lot of time. I worked with Mobius, my engineer, on getting a lot of, as Todd said, customized gear. And here is sort of what we set up. We were, again, in the basement of a big house. Our lab's in a new location now, and it's partly because of this experiment. We fried some stuff.
Knowing you, you did.
And so we were in this big house. There was a living area upstairs, and the whole downstairs was our laboratory. So in one room, we placed, investigator Shelley Wright. She's a very imaginative person, and we put this sort of apparatus on her head. It's like an EKG-type device or EEG-type device that will actually take her brain waves, and it will boost them. It amplifies them. And then broadcast them through a Tesla coil type setup in an adjacent room. And the idea here was to take one person's thoughts, but boost them up technologically so much that it's the equivalent of hundreds of thousands of people all thinking the exact same identical thing at once. Now, as she's doing this, we have her looking at a monitor, and that monitor is showing her the view a camera has in the room next to the Tesla coil. Sitting in front of that camera is a doll, essentially. And it just so happened that Forrest had a buddy who recently got back from Hawaii, and we had this ugly little tiki doll, and we said, hey, let's make this the object of our focus.
Ah.
If I'd known now what would happen, I would have gotten a Marilyn Monroe doll.
Well, hold on right there, because it sounds like the moment from Weird Science. Joshua P. Warren with us, Todd Lincoln. We're going to talk more about this experiment and the movie The Apparition when we come right back next hour. Joshua P. Warren hangs around for some phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Don't touch your dial. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Joshua Warren with us, Todd Lincoln. Josh, so you had this tiki doll. What happened?
Well, you know, our subject, again, Shelley Wright, she was in a shielded room, and the reason is because, keep in mind, her brain waves are being amplified and broadcast over a range of miles, so there was a lot of feedback issues. And Warner Brothers even sent a small crew out to document this. As she's focusing on this little tiki doll, and that's her focal point, to try to manifest this thing with this boosted brain power, we're also observing the room with all kinds of different optics. We've got electrostatic generators running. We're charging up the room. Things are starting to glow blue. We're starting to get little electrical sparks. And it was very dramatic, because what we found was we turned all this stuff on, and this huge field starts sort of creating what we call a harmonic or a self-reinforcing type field, where it is coming back to itself, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the frequency started increasing and ramping up, and we're all sitting there on the edge of our seat. And I mean, it kind of reminds me of that moment in The Right Stuff when Chuck Yeager is about to break the sound barrier. You know, yeah. What's going to happen? You know, things are starting to shake and rattle. And then all of a sudden, after an hour of this, we burn out two of our coils, another one of our boosters. One of our cameras went down. It built up. It was such a self sort of reinforcing field. It just absolutely dissipated, and we sat there in silence. Nothing happened.
Nothing.
And we waited for hours. Nothing happened. It was a big disappointment. So we were like, well, I guess we've proven that the experiment doesn't work instantly, blah, 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 blah. Everybody went home. We thought that was a really cool thing. It sucks that a bunch of our equipment is now fried, but hey, it was a worthy endeavor. And then, 7 days later, and I'm not sure what the significance of that is, I was in the laboratory by myself, and I started hearing the scratching on the walls. And I told Forrest Connor, who owns the building there and lives upstairs, I said, we need to put some traps around here. I think we have some vermin or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then light bulbs start blowing. One after the other. I could not keep a light bulb going. The next day, I go into the laboratory, and I thought I was in there by myself. But Forrest, again, he lives upstairs, and he keeps everything protected, or he kept everything protected, and he was well-armed. So here I am working in the laboratory, and I hear these big, heavy footsteps coming down the stairs. And I turned around, and I saw what looked like a big, huge shadow at first, because Forrest is a big guy. And I said, hey, Forrest, don't shoot me. It's Joshua, right? And the footsteps just stopped. And I turn back around, and I see this shadow, but it looks gross and disfigured, okay? The head of this thing looked almost like it had a headpiece. Now, before I continue, Sean was kind enough to put up a picture of this general lab set up on your Coast
website.
Yeah,
we've got those links for you.
And you can see this tiki doll if you go to joshuapwarren.com. I've got detailed pictures of that and some recordings of apparitional stuff. I always remind people there's no period after the P. Go to joshuapwarren.com. You'll see this thing has a big, crazy-looking head. But I turned around, I saw this, and I thought, well, Forrest is about to play a prank on me or something. And so I go creeping over there, and as I walk up on this big thing that I believe is a shadow, it just disappears. And at that point, I swear, my blood ran cold. And there was a moment where I said, Forrest? Forrest. And Forrest wasn't there. I didn't know Forrest had gone out of town that day. Nobody was there. And whenever I have a moment where true, like, fear jolts through me like that, the way I try to relieve it is by taking pictures immediately. So I jerked out my cell phone. I started snapping off pictures, and I didn't get anything. So, of course, I'm questioning what happened. It was very freaky. It was very eerie. But that was just the beginning. After that, for the next few days, we had times when we would hear this calamitous noise. We'd walk into the bathroom or the bedroom, and there would be objects that were in cabinets strewn all over the place. Forrest's girlfriend, who lived upstairs with him, who didn't even know about the experiment, amazingly enough, because she was gone when we did it, she said he woke up one night with this wild look in his eyes, gazing up at the ceiling, and he was talking to something up there at the ceiling, and she said it just was really creepy, and it was scaring her. And then the following night, she woke up in the middle of the night, heard something moving in the kitchen. She walks into the kitchen, and here is this large figure. It looks like a man, but she said, and this is in her exact words, he looked like he was shaking his head back and forth at 100 miles per hour. She said it was the freakiest looking thing she's ever seen. She ran immediately, woke up Forrest, and said, what is going on here? Well, George, this kind of stuff continued until finally the entire electrical system and the whole lower half of the building just melted out when we weren't even doing experiments.
Now, is this thing still around or is it gone now?
Well, I thought it was gone. I thought that it appeared for a few days, and it was gone, and immediately we said, okay, we have to move our laboratory to a new location where we have a better electrical system, and we have to do this again. And we have since done that. We've moved our whole lab to a different location in downtown Asheville. It's in the basement to where my museum is, and we're trying to set this back up with new equipment. But Forrest has told me, and especially his girlfriend, that even though we are gone out of that lower level of his house, that it's still happening once in a while.
It's still there.
Not as frequent. But we're on to something here, and I think the implications of this, which we'll dig into a little bit more tonight, are absolutely startling for understanding, A, what a ghost is, and what the mind-body-environment relationship actually is.
Todd, what was your reaction when all this started to happen?
Well, I was blown away and thought it was scary and also promising, and like Josh said, had tons of implications for where things could go and just the power of belief and fear. And then, you know, we've been talking since then about what happens if you reverse some of these ideas. What about the power of, you know, disbelief or unbelieving things as well? And what does that mean for going to, you know, previously, you know, places that were considered haunted or paranormal type events. So it's amazing.
And the apparition, it comes out next Friday, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Are you excited about it?
Yeah, no, it's an exciting, surreal time. You know, this is the first feature film for Warner Brothers, and it hits theaters everywhere next Friday. And we've got a young, cool cast of Ashley Green from Twilight and Sebastian Stan from Captain America and Harry Potter, Tom Felton from Harry Potter, who plays Draco Malfoy. And, you know, it's about a group of parapsychology university students who set out to do one of these experiments, to create a ghost, to create an apparition. And we see what ends up happening. They end up getting something, creating something, unleashing something, and we see how it affects them and terrorizes them and how it terrorizes this young couple played by Ashley Green and Sebastian Stan. But with this film, you know, why they are haunted, how they are haunted, what's haunting them is all completely different than what we're used to, that this apparition is something this group created, and this is not the ghost of a human or anything that was ever living. This is this dark, malevolent, unknown, inhuman entity that gains its power from belief and fear. And so this idea that, you know, for the first time in film, really seeing, you know, this thing that in the paranormal field, it's the sort of rarest, most terrifying thing of all, coming across the full body apparition in the darkness. And you know, it's more about, with the film, really trying to do it in a way that's more about what you don't see and don't show and don't explain. Because I feel that, you know, horror, true horror, is best left in the shadows and to your imagination. Mm-hmm. So, but things do start to ramp up in the film and go to the next level. So this is, you know, really a new horror film for a new decade and shot on 35mm with these vintage anamorphic lenses. And it's kind of like a, you know, Poltergeist 30 years on. So I think with some of those flatliners or Prince of Darkness type experiment elements, so excited for people to see.
It's a pretty good budget too. I hear it's around $17 million plus.
Yeah, no, and we shot, you know, for 5 weeks in Berlin at Studio Babelsberg, and 3 weeks in L.A. in the Santa Clarita and Palmdale areas. And, you know, it's very much, you know, this sort of new American contemporary setting of the big box stores and suburban sprawl and new housing developments and empty foreclosed homes. And, you know, because I just think that so much of the recent horror films and upcoming horror films, that they are all sort of caught in this kind of lazy go-to horror bubble. And so we try to keep it really honest with the settings and locations and looking like everyday life and with the character relationships and with all the horror aspects and you know, consulting with Josh when making sure all the jargon and technical terms and equipment were correct. So it, you know, it really, so we sort of enter this movie in a new way of creating an apparition. And then we go lots of unexpected places in this film. And, you know, also, well, we get out of the film in a whole new way, too. So,
Todd, when you're shooting the movie, is it scary for you, or does it get scary after you look at it complete?
Oh, God. Well, I'm more scared in the development and pre-production of it, of just really digging deep and researching you know, all this paranormal stuff. And I drew on some of my own experiences. I'm, you know, originally grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and lived in this historic home in this, it was supposedly haunted and experienced lots of strange things. And it was next to this, it was in this neighborhood called Swan Lake, the Swan Lake neighborhood, and which the Swan Lake was this man-made lake that the cowboys and Native Americans used to use as kind of a watering hole, and had all this history. And that whole neighborhood and that house was really a hot spot for strange activity that kind of piqued my curiosity about all this stuff at a young age. But not really so much scary stuff, during the film. But I mean, there were moments. I had a thermal camera that I was testing and that I had to learn how to use in order to explain to the actors how to use this thermal camera for a scene. And and I was going around these hallways and some of these dark passageways at Studio Babelsberg in East Berlin that has all this history. And you know, there were moments where I thought I saw something, you know, standing at the end of a hallway or quickly moving past the camera. But, you know, I was not an expert at using it at that point, so sometimes I can't tell what the red or what the blue means. But there was definitely a eerie feeling around the film, and there was a, you know, a darkness and a weight in the air. So we were very much in the right mindset.
Tell me about Josh, your role with the movie as a consultant. Did you have fun?
You know, I'll be honest with you. When I heard that somebody who is just a screenwriter I'd never heard of before wanted to send me a script for a horror movie, my expectations were not very high. You know, I do this type of work all the time, and usually people in quote unquote Hollywood just don't get it, you know? But I got this script, and I sat down reading it, and I thought, this is incredible. That this idea is so simple but brilliant. And I was a little bit embarrassed that I'd not thought about this in the same way that he had, because as Todd said, I had been working on projects that were related to the Philip experiment. But I never thought about what it would take to literally take one particular individual and focus that person's mind. Because let me tell you what I mean by that.
Sure.
Usually when these Philip experiment type things are done, you get a group of people together. And the idea is that you tell all these different people, okay, this is the fault or this is the profile of thought that we are all going to collaborate on and cooperate on and lend our brain power to. But the problem is it's absolutely impossible for everybody, of course, to have an identical image of the goal. I mean, it's like right now I could say Santa Claus, and there are, you know, a million different people in your audience who would have a million different visions of exactly what their version of Santa Claus looks like. And so there's no way that you can get the equivalent power of hundreds of thousands or even millions of people focusing on a single thing to be identical, but you certainly can take one individual's thoughts, one individual's ideas, one individual's manifestations, and add the same level of power to it. And that was the groundbreaking concept here, that we could marry technology in almost this cyborg fashion to this psychic ability to manifest things in reality, which is becoming more and more relevant as time goes on, which is something we'll probably discuss later in the program. And so when I saw this and I realized that, hey, I've been doing this kind of research for 20 years, and I've never thought about this precisely the way that this writer-director has, I instantly had respect for Todd, and I've now come to know him and realize this guy is not just some commercial filmmaker. He is a true paranormal enthusiast, and I have not seen this movie yet, but I can tell you that the idea that we were able to take something that existed in fiction and turn it into fact within the same project may be unprecedented. I've been racking my brain. I can't think of another time when it's happened. There are plenty of examples when the opposite happens.
Sure.
You know, but for me, sitting down and figuring out how to put this together was a great pleasure. Even when I didn't think it was working, I thought it was a really cool thing to do. But now that it has worked, and now that I've seen an apparitional form with my own naked eyes, and I've had all the resources at my disposal to document this properly, and again, we're about to try to recreate the whole thing with better equipment and a new location when we're fully prepared for what to expect, because, you know, we didn't know 7 days something was going to happen after the effect. I mean, we weren't prepared to document something 7 days later. This is huge. This is absolutely huge, and I believe that the concept alone will transform paranormal scientific research.
And for you, Todd, if this pops, it could put you on the map again, you know, as a director.
Yeah, no, that would be amazing. No, it's really exciting, and we really set out to treat this honest and authentic, and avoid all the typical gothic, grungy, you know, rusty, scratchy go-to kind of imagery that's in so many horror films, and just really capture the details of life and the details of these types of experiments, and you know, just really it triggered early on writing the script of, you know, thinking back to that Philip experiment done in the earlier mid-70s where it's, you know, six people sitting around a table trying to believe and focus on this idea of Philip and calling out to him. And I just thought, well, you know, what if you took that to the next level with technology and these, you know, these EEG headsets I had been reading about that measure brain activity and the power of the mind. And if you, in just sort of a sci-fi way, I, you know, wrote down that those EEG headsets that people wore, if they could be hooked up to these amplifiers and you could amplify these brain waves. So like Josh said, instead of six people back in the 70s who were focusing on this around a table, now it could be like, you know, there were 600 or 6,000 or 600,000 people and on and on. So it's, the fact that Josh was starting to experience things and get some results and then where he takes it from here, it's just really, really cool. So,
well, good luck, Todd. The movie comes out. It's called The Apparition, comes out nationwide next Friday on the 24th. Joshua Warren sticks around. We'll be back with him. We're going to talk a little bit about a ghost in a school, and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM.